Hi, I'm Ken.
And I'm Dee.
And this is Antiques Freaks.
For podcasts.
Yes.
By podcasts. All podcast network.
What antiques were we talking about this week?
So the entire time I was going to introduce this, the gremlin in my brain that makes me make bad decisions wanted me to yell the line from Cats 2019 where he just says, milk.
Are we covering milk bottles?
We are.
Yes! Yes!
Milk.
All right.
Actually, yeah, the title of the article of like my notes just says Milk Cats 2019. People have been putting milk in stuff since we found out that we could milk things.
Yes.
And that's the end of the podcast, everybody. Bye. There's really not much more to it than that. Sometimes a farmer just has too much milk, though. Why are you looking at me like that?
Because I'm waiting for you to continue.
I thought you had something to add, like, yeah, what?
No, it's just all these years of friendship have meant that I trust that you will, at some point, tie these disparate thoughts together.
You've had way too much faith in me.
Okay, well, milk in bottles, hey?
So nobody's 100% sure when the idea of bringing milk to people, as opposed to just having milk that was yours and that was your milk, and or bartering milk. The idea of delivering milk, it's really fuzzy about when that started happening, but roughly 1780, blah, blah, and probably in Vermont, is when we first start seeing references to farmers bringing milk to people.
Ye old Ben and Jerry.
Ye old Ben and ye old Jerry. And it was mostly just because even if you were a subsistence farmer, if you had more than one cow, you probably had more milk than you needed.
Unpossible.
I mean, very possible, or they wouldn't have gotten started in this whole business. Or where would Ben and or Jerry have gotten the idea, Ken? They would have been hoarding that milk to themselves. They wouldn't even turn it into iced creams.
I'm pretty sure at some point it would have occurred to them that it's better if you make it cold and add sugar.
No, absolutely not. So, the earliest kinds of milk delivery would be a man in a cart, horse-drawn cart. And he would have essentially an enormous vat of milk, and he would roll up to your house, and you would hand him something, and he would dip that something in the milk, and you would have the milk.
And then everyone was like, wait, this is curdling before I even get to anyone's house. Maybe we should divide it up further?
Actually, that wasn't the first concern.
Oh, no.
My next note says more like diphtheria, am I right? And... Which segues nicely into the first milk bottles, which were more or less entirely created because someone saw their milk getting dipped into a giant vat that everything else got dipped into and went, ugh.
Someone woke up and was like, wait, this is gross.
Yeah, there's an urban legend that a New York druggist, Harvey Thatcher, introduced his milk bottles in 1884.
Because 84?
1884.
Jesus, it took us a fucking while to figure that one out, huh?
Yeah, it was a grip before everyone was like, oh, that's not, like, my favorite.
Oh, that's icky, actually.
Yeah, so the legend is that he watched a milkman dip a bottle or jar into a can into which a child had earlier dropped a toy. So, like, just villagers were just, like, throwing things into the communal milk can, and then he was just like, well, you're gonna drink this now. And Mr. Thatcher legendarily said, oh god, no. Oh god, oh god, oh god, no. And he introduced a bottle. Now, the bottle was much like the competitor for first milk bottle, or I guess I should say milk jar, which does hold a patent earlier than Mr. Thatcher's bottle. The Leicester milk jar was pretty much a square glass jar. It's okay, these are hard to describe if you've never seen them, but they're like thumb screw lids. And you see them for, like, acid batteries and similar, like, heavy-duty things that you need to lock on glass jars. It's kind of like a wire cage with, like, a screw top that you screw down to secure the lid to the jar. It's very Byzantine. It looks like a torture device. It was meant to keep your milk fresh. Mr. Thatcher's design, which is probably better known because it's basically just a ball jar but smaller, it had a glass top with a wire bail to hold it closed. So sorry, Mr. Leicester Milk Jar, your thing was way too hard to use. And from there, milk bottles really took the hell off. There was an additional problem to using milk bottles and delivering with milk bottles, which was that the bottle was often worth much more than the milk.
Well, okay, but like, I feel like that's true of most reusable containers.
Well, yeah, but the kids these days, they don't know about reusable containers. They didn't go down to the Cott's soda farm and get their Cott's soda rebottled.
They're missing out.
The Virginia Dare soda rebottling process. They don't remember that. In this day and age of disposability? But yeah, okay, so the farms needed the bottles back because the bottles were a serious investment. You were not allowed to have the bottle. Which is why milk bottles, once they started taking off as an idea of getting milk to people, were labeled. So that you knew where this bottle came from and you brought the bottle the fuck back. Please and thank you.
Would you not just leave the empties out for the milkman to collect on his route when he came back with more milk?
Yes.
Okay. Because the way you said it made it sound like you had to hike back to the farm.
No, okay, all right, that, yes, I misspoke there. But it was more of a, you need to differentiate this bottle from the other bottles once it's empty.
Yes.
Yeah. But so you need to set out the right bottle for the milkman to grab the next day.
Yes.
Or you didn't get your milk back if you didn't give him back his goddamn bottle. And I'm not kidding, that's, they did hold your milk hostage if you didn't give them back the bottle.
So what you could do is just run down the street tagging everyone's empty bottles, and then you have all the milk. You are the milk king.
I guess, but I feel like you're going to get in a different kind of trouble at that point. So milk is good. No.
Are you saying milk is not good?
I'm saying milk is fucking horrendous.
Are you declaring yourself as an enemy of big dairy?
Yes, I would like milk to be dead, please. I'm lactose intolerant.
It's not like a medical condition, that's just a personal lifestyle choice. Yeah, so you are intolerant towards dairy products.
I'm emotionally and, like, morally intolerant to the dairy. So, milk bottles have been marked. Earlier, they were etched. So this would either be done by hand, later sand etching, acid etching, yada yada, a lot of ways to etch a bottle.
Etching basically meaning digging into the surface of the bottle to create a design.
Yeah, in some way, shape, or form. The thing about etching is that it was used pretty much stably over the entire history of milk bottles, so it is not useful for dating. The earliest ones tend to be etched, but you can't really look at an etched bottle and go, ah, the earliest bottle.
Because you can etch it whenever?
Because you could etch it at any point. And and like less affluent dairies would use etching because the other methods were really expensive.
Callback to our Jefferson Wine episode. Anyone can etch a bottle.
Anyone can etch a bottle.
At any time.
And it turns out mimicking old etching from someone who wasn't practiced at etching is the easiest to do yet. Later on, metals, pretty much from the 1890s, you saw metal slugs that were used to emboss blank bottles with a dairy name. Now, this was expensive, but not too expensive. A metal slug would just require one, like, manufacturing, and then you could stamp all the bottles you wanted. You actually saw all-over designs using special bottle molds from some of the more up-and-coming rich dairies. I think Cumberland Farms. And after that, precisely 1933, or although more information on this is very hard to come by, you see applied color labels using a silkscreen-style application called pyroglazing. So this is a metal paint that's fired onto the bottle.
Oh.
And this is actually probably the milk bottle that conjured up in your mind when I said milk bottle. I feel like there's the pop culture vision of the tall, like, slender-necked milk bottle with, like, a single color label on it.
In my imagination, they never have colors on them.
Really? You need to get out and see more milk bottles, my man.
Apparently.
The shapes actually stayed fairly consistent. They would be cylindrical with a short or mid-length neck and a mouth for ease of pouring. Very much, much, much later, turn of the 20th century onward, that started to morph into short, squat, and square, which again is probably more of the pop culture icon of a milk bottle. And at some point in between all of this nonsense in the 1920s, you saw cream top bottles.
Are they shaped to allow the cream to rise to the top easier?
They are. They have a bulge along the neck. So it's like mouth, pinch, bulge, pinch, rest of the bottle. And that would allow the cream to rise to the top and settle in this little bulge. And the mouth was still fairly wide, so you could get in
and
with...
Scoop it
right out. Scoop that cream.
Yeah.
My favorite thing about cream top bottles is that they got really silly with the bulge shape in the bottle. And you see, I think the two most common ones are babies. It's a baby's head.
Oh, no.
And cops. Like a policeman.
Wait.
And those were called... Guess what those were called? Guess the joke. No, go ahead, please. It'll be easy.
Pig's milk?
No. Whoa! My guy! Cream of the cop.
Oh.
Which I hate, really, but it's
that's
funny.
That's pretty good.
A cab. All cops are cream.
Assigned cream at birth?
All cops are bottle. Dumb. It's a dumb joke. Why are you laughing?
Because it's funny. Okay.
Then you get into, like I said before, the earliest types had wire bill closure, which were later fitted with common sense bottles, which had a shorter lip and were meant to have paper caps just kind of snapped onto them. Most people liked that better because it was seen as more hygienic. This ended up being true, although not for the reasons they thought. One interesting thing about milk bottles is that there's an entire period of time that's like dotted throughout the history of milk bottles. I think it still happens now, actually, that milk would spoil faster in a clear glass or a clear container of any sort.
Well, I guess if it's in sun, the glass will let the light through but not let the heat out, so the milk inside will heat up faster.
Correct. They were right, but not for the reasons they thought they were.
Wait, what reason did they think that
They thought the light itself corrupted the milk. Nobody had made the leap that it was the light causing heat to be trapped in the bottle.
Oh, and that's why Lucifer is the light bringer.
Yeah. To spoil your milk.
Yes. Milk spoiled by Satan.
I do remember that there, I remember seeing some ads from the 1950s where, like, they did hold on to the belief that, like, the refrigerator light would spoil your milk.
Doesn't the refrigerator light turn off when you when you shut the door?
It's the 1950s. Nobody knew anything.
They didn't know how their own goddamned appliance worked?
They did not.
And they let it into their home?
Let that sink in.
That'd be like buying a Wi-Fi enabled camera and putting it in your child's bedroom and not expecting someone to hack into it.
Don't do that, by the way.
Yeah, hey, real talk. Don't.
Hey, Internet of Things is the worst idea anyone's ever had, and if we don't seize it as consumers, then it will destroy you.
And pedophiles will hack into your children's bedrooms through their nanny cam.
Yeah, no.
So,
analog nanny cams, everybody, they do still exist. Anyway, this aside. So there are...
Jesus fuck.
Wow. That's the one that got you, huh?
Yeah, no, that was the final straw.
So there are rare examples that are amber, green, or... milk glass. And again, these worked, but not for any of the reasons people thought.
Milk glass worked because it already had milk in it.
Yes. And so it was like a constant metaphysical milk being replenished in a never-ending loop.
Infinite milk.
They really tapped in. I hear there are some people out there with milk glass milk bottles. They've been drinking the same milk since 1940. Eventually, in the 1970s, milk bottles were officially and almost permanently ousted by wax paper cartons.
Because cheaper,
and then eventually plastic, but I figured you guys all knew that.
Tell me more about this plastic.
No.
Okay.
Well, it ruined everything, and that's why we don't have antiques anymore.
Yay!
I hate plastic. Just kidding. Plastic is important.
Plastics make it possible.
Who are you paying? Who's paying you?
Plastics.
Nice. Although, actually, I found out, I had no idea about this. Apparently the UK is just backwards as hell. That was the wrong way to say that, I realized now. They still do milk bottle delivery in the UK.
How is that backwards?
I don't know.
That sounds like it's more sustainable, because you're reusing the container.
Yeah.
It's glass, which, like, actually breaks down, unlike plastic.
You know...
Is it because they drive the milk carts down the wrong side of the road? Is that why they're backwards?
Yes.
Okay.
But yeah, no, there are actually still milk delivery trucks in parts of the UK. The milk delivery... I think the UK is one of the very few places that it really endured and is still, like, a thing that you can find in communities. Although, I gotta say, with the rise of people wanting to know where the hell their food's coming from, I have actually seen a lot of it, like, even locally... I actually do avail myself to a glass bottle return milk from a local dairy. It is raw milk, which I realize is a risk. I wish someday they would offer pasteurized. But...
Meanwhile, living down the road from a large dairy farm for the first 18 years of my life...
Well, how did you get your... Did you just bring a bucket?
No, but, like, there's a farm stand, like, every mile along the road. Like, you can get milk straight from the farm.
Yeah, but was it in a glass bottle?
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah. And usually there's no one at the farm stand, so you just, like, put the money in a bucket, take the milk, and then bring back an empty bottle, and magically there's more milk for you to get.
Yeah, no, that's what it is, but, like, since I'm a city slicker, you know, it took like, the rise of, like, the hipsters to kind of bring that back into... Actually, the farm stand that I get, like, most of my goods from, they also have that, like, honor system, freezers full of slaughtered meat.
Yeah.
Which is really fun. And it's good meat, I gotta say.
I believe it, but I'm also very concerned that someday one of you city slickers is gonna take advantage of their hospitality.
No, they got a camera. They are ready for... They were waiting. They knew where they were.
But who's hacked into that camera?
That's a good question. This is actually... They also have a petting zoo that has a one-eyed pony. I love him.
Aww.
Yeah.
Pony.
Anyway.
So milk bottles.
So the 40s and 50s are considered the golden age of milk bottles. And actually, milk bottles from this period are some of the most collectible. Although... This is one of those really fun antiques where when you're talking about collectability, value, desirability, things get pretty wiggity.
But do they get whack?
Oh, they get whack. So I have yet to meet a single milk bottle collector in my entire life.
Full stop.
Full stop. I've never met one that didn't have a connection to dairy in some way, shape, or form. Because the thing about milk bottles, like a lot of other of these like everyday antiques that we talk about, is that there's so many. Oh my god, there's so many. These were a really common fact of life for the 1700s to 1980. So like, there's so many. So usually when you meet collectors, they tend to have always a specific focus, usually a local focus. Every milk bottle collector I've met thus far has been affiliated with a local dairy, and that's like their ideal collector. And they get bits and bobs here that they like, but that's kind of what they focus on. So when you're talking about value, you're talking about a lot of different things. Older pieces are always going to be worth more. But there are a lot of rare pieces that just aren't as valuable because no one knows the dairy they came from. They're not an interesting shape. They're not a cool color. They don't have a pyroglaze label. Like, it's pretty much the Wild West out there with bottles. Those are some of my favorite antiques. I really love when you get to decide what is going to make it valuable to you. I think that that is, like, absolutely, like, the bottom floor most fun. If you're sitting there, you're like, no, I'm a completionist, I want the oldest ones. Your number one thing that's going to help you determine age is probably a mixture of everything I was talking about. Method of manufacturing. You're going to combine all of the labeling, the top, how the glass was manufactured, and you're going to get a pretty good picture about when it was made. For example, you got Pontal scars, pretty well known, 1850, 1855, and onward, but less commonly after. And then you get mold-blown pieces. That's going to take a lot of in-depth research because every region had a different mold-blowing process. But usually it's when you see a smooth pontal mark and mold lines. Specifically northeastern milk bottles, there is a thing where the molding was really clever. The seam lines disappear up near the neck and marked with the smooth pontal mark. A lot of people think they're hand-blown. They're not. You got to be wicked careful. Usually it's pretty easy to deduce by seeing how many seam lines there are and like just using the seam lines to reconstruct how it was built. Because the earliest mold blow machines would be three parts. You get a bottom, middle, and a top, and they get smooshed all together. That gets kind of, like I said, wiggity whack before, because that's anywhere from 1850 to the 1930s. And I say 1930s! Because that was the height of the popularity of the Owens automatic bottle making machine, although it was patented in 1905. It did not start being easy and cheap to use until about the 1930s, but it did exist. And that is a fully automated mold blowing, no hands, human lips, air ever touches these bottles. They tend to have exactly two seam lines, a very classic sandwich mold style, and they are, oddly enough, not as common as you'd think. Being a fully automated process. A lot of people stuck with the classic, like, Victorian mold blowing. That's that point where you're going to have to start coming up with other elements of the bottle to determine age. So, fun fact, and I do want this in the podcast, the automatic bottle making machine was also often called the blow and blow machine. So you can have fun with that.
Oh no. Oh no.
One really cool thing I actually did not know about until I dipped into this. Milk dip. Don't give me that face. We talked about you dip the bottle in the milk. Okay, all right. Well, listen, it's not the worst joke I've ever made.
Fair.
From the early 1920s, a lot of the bigger milk bottle companies used rim codes. They were numeric codes pressed onto the bottom rim of the bottle that was meant to track the life of the returnable bottles. As you may have guessed, this makes it very easy to date these bottles. And I do have a website where you can go and download a guide to what rim codes mean what years. Another, like, fun thing, some of them are stamped store to differentiate a store bottle from a delivery bottle.
Oh.
I don't know why. It doesn't seem like it's important, but I guess it was to them.
So you can't just steal a bunch of empty bottles from the store and put them on your stoop and get free milk.
Oh. There, and now you've deduced the reason.
Milk crimes.
Wow, I thought I was enough of a criminal to have figured that out, but apparently I wasn't thinking of milk crime. The creamiest of all the crimes. Cream of the cop.
Oh no.
So one really cool thing about milk bottles as a collectible, they don't get reproduced a lot. There's really no reason and no point because the values don't hold very high. Except...
Cream of the cop?
Cream of the cops actually do get reproduced a lot, yeah. Just because they're so goddamn goofy.
Why cops?
I...
Okay, wait. Is it possible that it's actually supposed to be, like, a milk delivery man head, but it just looks like a cop head because the cop uniform has remained unchanged since that time, whereas there are no more milk delivery men?
I don't know a lot of milk delivery men who would have had a nightstick, so...
To keep the cows away.
Yeah, the cows are always trying to get that milk back.
Yeah.
It's rough. It's rough out there. All right, do you want a conspiracy theory from me? So, my uncle has a little porcelain cop statuette from the 1930s. And it is a... I'm going to go ahead and call it racist caricature of your standard Irish cop. And I've noticed over time that when you run into these standard racist Irish caricatures of cops, they tend to have very round, smiling, flushed faces. I think that's why, is because people drew so many racist caricatures of Irish cops that it was just like, oh, it's a round, like a dumb Irish cop's head.
But it doesn't...
That's a conspiracy. I can't back that up at all, except that I've seen a bunch of cop caricatures that look that way.
But, like, where does it connect to the milk?
It's round. There's no, the milk doesn't come in at all. They milk? Saw a round part on a bottle and they're like, hey, like a cop. Like a cop's big round face. The babies make more sense, though. You are right.
Yeah.
It's like a baby does drink milk and has a round head.
Yes.
Making it an ideal design choice. The cop, I do not understand. Are the Irish known for loving milk?
You'd know.
You son of a... We don't have any milk in New Jersey. That was worth the confusion that swept over your features. Yes, the cream of the cops are pretty frequently reproduced. The worst offenders are Disney slogans. So when pyroglazing came in and applied color labels, a lot of lesser-known dairies would use the rest of the bottle as free, as basically advertising. Not free advertising, you would pay for it. Disney took full advantage of this. So there are bottles out there that have Disney characters saying things about milk. I hate it, but hey, I've never been particularly, like, fond of the Disney characters, so.
Well.
Not like the classic ones. They just look like capitalism to me now.
Wow.
That and war slogans. Yes, during the... Specifically World War II, there weren't a lot of slogan earrings for World War I because it was just bad.
Because no one wanted to be there?
No one... It had happened so suddenly. It wasn't... We hadn't developed propaganda yet. Like, right?
Okay,
we hadn't done a good job yet.
Okay, that is patently untrue in a way that I don't have time to go into on this episode, but...
Okay, propaganda was...
Short version, no.
There's no propaganda that will ever even hold a candle to how out and out bizarre and effective the World War II propaganda was.
Oh, yeah.
Is what I meant to convey.
Okay.
So you get there are a lot of World War II bottles that just have sometimes racist, usually just war bond related propaganda on them. Those two, Disney and war propaganda, are very commonly reproduced because they cross over into other collectability like alleys, which makes them incredibly desirable to everyone all the time. They're unique, they're unusual, they are highly sought after, regardless of whether or not they're a milk bottle. It was going to happen. Usually, the copies are bad enough that this is not hard to figure out. For example, no one really does pyroglazing anymore, so if you have an applied color pyroglaze label, you can actually just kind of take your nail to that puppy, and if the paint comes off, it's not real. Because they're not pyroglazing, they're just screen printing. Another one, I found an example of a war slogan bottle that was dated 1951.
Hang on.
I don't think so.
Hang on.
Probably not, actually. So there are a lot of sloppy mistakes for any milk bottle, but especially one that you might be worried is a repro. Why don't you try to find out if that dairy ever existed?
Oh.
Milk bottle collecting is popular enough that there are a lot of people archiving those kinds of facts, and we are living in the internet age where this is easier than ever. And a lot of these reproduced Disney war slogan bottles feature just made-up dairies, which is bonkers to me because it would be fairly simple to look up a dairy company.
But is it easier to reproduce a Disney character where you know what they look like and then just make a generic milk bottle for a generic dairy rather than going through the trouble of researching what specific milk bottles from specific dairies look like?
I guess, but if you're, like, put in some effort.
I'm just saying, if I was going to do milk crime, that is how I would do it.
All right. I'm going to report you to Sotheby's.
Again?
Do not buy milk bottles from this gentleman. He is a ruffian.
I'll just go to Christie's. They won't care.
They will not vet it in the slightest. If it says Sun Brokers on the bottom and it's a half pint bottle and it has a war slogan, those are all fake. Pretty much any bottle made by the Wheaton Company, it's not a reproduction by the strictest sense of the word, but they are modern creations for current dairies.
Okay.
So they are not an antique or necessarily collectible milk bottle, unless you have an affinity for the dairy it was made for. And that's milk bottles. You have any questions? Comments? Concerns? Any messages you want to leave those dirty fucking milk bottles? Tell them where to get off.
The end.
I guess not.
Sources?
Sources today include milkbottlecollectors.com. Thank you. Filling that slot that we always need filled. Backinthedayantiques.com. The history of milk bottles and what to look for. Collectorsweekly.com. Bottles/milk. LebanonMilkBottles.com/collecting. DrLoriV.com. Collectible milk bottles. For more general info on, like, really, really nitty-gritty stuff that would bore you to get into, on, like, dating bottles, sourcing bottles, yada yada, sha.org/bottle/index. Absolutely wonderful resource. That was the website I mentioned that has a list of rim codes. And just anything you need to know about dating a bottle, it will be there. AntiqueMedicines.com, bottle types, also. And this one was fun and I thought I'd include it because it's one of the interesting things about bottles that I love. AntiqueBottles-Glass.com, digging antique bottles. Most of the people I know who collect antique bottles do so by archaeological digging. And that has a really fantastic article about how to get started, what to be concerned about. It's really one of the more fun things about antiques.
Nice.
Yeah.
If you want to talk about milk bottles, email us directly at antiquesfreakspodcast@gmail.com. Or check out our Facebook at facebook.com/antiquesfreaks and join our Facebook group, Antiques Freaks Friends.
Show me your milk bottles.
Please do.
That sounded weirdly...
No, you had it.
No, okay.
If you would like to purchase some vintage goods, you can check out our Etsy at etsy.com/shop/antiquesfreaks. And yes.
And it sure is there. We also have t-shirts.
And stickers.
And stickers. If you liked the words that came in your ears and then processed through your cortex to turn into concepts, please feel free to scroll down to wherever you're listening to this. And leave us a rating. Any kind of rating would be helpful. I'm partial to the 5-star ratings, but whatever you're feeling honestly gives us a big help.
Heck yeah.
Thank you to our patrons on our Patreon.
Our Patreon at patreon.com/antiquesfreaks, where you can listen to deleted scenes and join the Random Vintage Postcard of the Month Club, where we send you a random vintage postcard every month.
And you can also just be a part of this.
This.
Just be a part of it.
Special shout out to our current patrons for paying our hosting fees, getting us this microphone, and getting us ever closer to our goal of releasing bonus episodes.
You the best.
And thank you in particular for listening.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.